This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and it is Tuesday, folks, so it is the day for Ask the Doctors. We will take your coronavirus questions with two specialists a little later in the hour. The number for those questions is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We want to start the day, however, with universities, because it is time to go back to class. Or is it? To say that college approaches to returning are a mixed bag would be to understate it. Boston University is bringing students back for in-person learning next week, but Harvard University keeping students remote through January 22nd. Emerson College keeping students remote this week, while Northeastern has declared it is time to move forward in a world where COVID is just going to be with us. One thing they do all have in common, they are requiring boosters for students, faculty, staff. So why all the different approaches and what goes into these decisions? Joining us now is Dr. Davidson Hamer, infectious disease physician at Boston Medical Center, a professor of infectious diseases, and he is on the team at Boston University that makes these decisions. Dr. Hamer, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
And Dr. Hamer, just quickly, for full transparency, we want to note that Boston University holds the broadcast license for WBUR. You heard me talk about the mixed bag there, and it makes me want to ask you, Dr. Hamer, what goes into these decisions? You know, emotion, public opinion, testing capacity, case counts, what goes into it?
That's a good question. I mean, I think that we actually have a group that meets periodically, like once every 1 or 2 weeks, and tries to harmonize what we're doing across universities. But not everybody comes to the same conclusion about level of risk and the strategies to contain that. And so, you know, there's different approaches. Like Tufts, for example, is testing every other day. BU is going to test undergraduates twice a week. And then, you know, as you heard, Harvard is going to be remote for at least some time to come. So very different approaches being taken.
I have wondered how much in-house capacity to test, contact, trace, isolate, et cetera, goes into these decisions. And if so, I recognize different universities have different resources. But it's been 2 years. Why not see more consistent capacity in various universities and therefore more consistent approaches?
It's tough. I mean, I think there's sort of different levels of sort of risk tolerance, but also comfort with mitigation strategies. And you're right. I mean, the resources required to do some of these things are pretty substantial. And so different universities have different degrees of, you know, sort of levels of resource availability. But I think that's only part of the issue. I think testing capacity is another. Contact tracing has become a real challenge because the number of cases has been so high, at least, you know, since late mid-December when Omicron surged.
Are college students very likely to spread? Are they disproportionately likely to have the coronavirus or spread it to others?
I think not necessarily. I mean, I think there's certainly high risk for acquiring it in the community and then spreading it amongst themselves. I think that there are a lot of different people. I mean, especially with Omicron, you know, they're just like every time I speak to somebody, you know, a friend, family member, worker, somebody's become exposed and infected. And a lot of this is community transmission. It has nothing to do with university. So, you know, I think there's just a high level of risk right now. And the students, because they're mingling with each other and often out at, you know, public places, they're a higher risk group for acquiring infection.
So I want to read you a quote from Northeastern Chancellor Ken Henderson, who sent a note out to the community over winter break. It read in part, quote, "It is now clear that COVID-19 in various forms will be with us for the foreseeable future. As we move into this endemic phase of the pandemic, our job is to continue to control COVID effectively, not let COVID control us," end quote. So let's do the wonky part first. For those who may not know, what does it mean to be endemic?
Endemic is when there's a disease that sort of long-term transmission of a disease may be sporadic. It may come on a seasonal basis, like influenza, but the disease has not completely disappeared from a location. But it's not epidemic. It's not causing major, large outbreaks. Although, you know, I think anytime you have an endemic disease, if there's some change in the disease or change in the level of protection immunity of the population, then there's a chance that you can have a big surge in cases. Pandemic is when that's happening all over the world. And I think we're still in a pandemic right now.
So you don't think we're in this endemic phase?
I think we're moving towards it, but we're not fully there yet. I mean, Omicron, if you look at the data, I mean, this is, you know, this is a serious wave, and it's rocketed up to, you know, unbelievably high levels. And it's far from endemic at this point in time.
Yeah, I want to point out more than 60,000 cases over a 3-day period here in the Commonwealth, the weekend through Monday. So this idea, nevertheless, Dr. Hamer, our job is to continue to control COVID effectively, not let COVID control us. I got to believe that speaks to pretty much everyone at a visceral level. I think everybody would like to not be being controlled by COVID. So what is the goal? I feel like there was a time when the goal was zero transmission. That does not seem to be the goal now. So, you know, you're part of a group at Boston University that makes these decisions. What's the goal?
I think the goal is to try and sort of keep transmission under relative control. You know, we have a lot more tools now between the vaccines, boosters, treatments of different kinds. And all these can help us control sort of the severity of the disease. I think we do need to try and keep it under control so that hospitalizations are not out of control. And right now, it's a pretty tough time to be a healthcare worker. The nice thing about Omicron is it appears to have evolved in such a way that it's causing less severe disease. And you know, that may also be an effect of the widespread use of vaccines in the Commonwealth and boosters, which are going to give at least some partial protection against Omicron. But if it evolves to the point where it's just causing more of an upper respiratory syndrome, we can deal with that. And we just learn how to, you know, sort of identify people quickly, isolate them, try and limit community spread, and then try and more aggressively treat people that have been exposed or are infected who are at higher risk. And that's where, you know, the treatments such as monoclonal antibodies and oral agents that are becoming available will be very helpful.
So I realize I'm sort of imagining in my head, Dr. Hamer, students start moving back to BU in a few short days, back to classes next week. I imagine the university sort of on one of those roller coasters where it's going up the hill and it's about to hit the peak and doesn't know how steep the roll-off is on the other side as all these students come back. Are you worried about what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks? And I guess, what's the goal there for the next 14 to 16 days?
I mean, I think the goal is, you know, as one of my colleagues puts it, screen and clean, try and identify people right on arrival, find those who are infected, put them in isolation, and basically try and prevent a massive amount of introduction of the virus on the campus. I know we're going to see a lot of cases. We're certainly concerned about that. And concerned, you know, for example, that we have sufficient isolation capacity. But if we can sort of limit the introduction of virus on the campus and then keep control through routine testing, indoor mask use, and other strategies, you know, we'll be able to have a relatively normal semester.
And is there a data point? Is there some threshold or trigger that you have on a dashboard somewhere? And if BU hits that number, even BU goes remote?
You know, we have a dashboard. We have some internal metrics that push us from sort of green to yellow to orange to red. But I think you would have to have multiple aspects of that, of those metrics, to really have us go remote. You know, I think that the president, you know, Bob Brown, is really wants to try and have in-person classes as much as possible and have a relatively normal campus. And it sounds like Northeastern is targeting the same approach.
And are you pretty
pretty
optimistic you can stay out of the full, you know, red zone?
I think so. We've managed to do it successfully so far, although Omicron presents one of the greatest challenges yet because of its high transmissibility.
All right. That is Dr. Davidson Hamer, infectious disease physician at Boston Medical Center and a professor of infectious diseases and medicine at the Boston University School of Medicine. Also sometimes one of our Ask the Doctors physician. Also great to talk to you in this capacity. Thanks, Dr. Hamer.
Okay. Thanks for having me again. Take care.
26 million. That is how many rapid at-home tests will be flooding into the Commonwealth over the next 3 months.
The tests will be prioritized to support K-12 education and childcare.
Governor Charlie Baker making that announcement and others this morning, including changing what's required to return to work after testing positive, and deploying 500 additional National Guard troops to hospitals across the state. All of this as Massachusetts and the country break records on hospitalizations, case counts in light of Omicron's free-ranging spread. Are you looking for a test? Do you have questions on what to do if you test positive and after you quarantine? Do you need more information about boosters or when and how it's safe to see others? Whatever it is, call us. Join the conversation, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us. We're at Radio Boston. So listeners, as I get ready to introduce our doctors, I do want to give you a heads up. We anticipate ending Radio Boston early today after Ask the Doctors so that WBUR can bring you special NPR coverage of President Joe Biden's speech on voting rights and the filibuster. We anticipate that later this hour. But first, plenty of time with our doctors. Shira Derone, attending physician, hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center and associate professor at the Tufts University School of Medicine. Welcome back, Dr. Derone.
Always great to be here.
And we have a new voice this week, Dr. Eric Dixon, president and CEO of UMass Memorial Health, based in central Massachusetts. Dr. Dixon, thanks for joining us. Dr. Dixon, do we have you?
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. And we do have calls already starting to pour in, but I want to ask the two of you a couple questions first. And Dr. Dixon, I'm going to start with you. After Governor Baker today said another 500 National Guard troops being activated, they are headed to Massachusetts hospitals. Your hospital, UMass Memorial, has the Guard there already. Take us to the hospital. What does care look like in this surge, and how taxed are you?
Well, it's hard to imagine that here in the most vaccinated state in the country, we are dealing with, at UMass Memorial, the worst of the three COVID surges. We had peaked in the first surge at 350 patients in central Massachusetts, 385 on the second surge, and we broke 450 today. And that's taking up a major piece of the bed capacity here in central Mass, leading to long, long waits in the emergency department, 25 patients waiting for an ICU bed. All of the ICU beds were full. We had run out of beds. And it's as bad as we've ever seen it during this entire pandemic.
So Dr. Dixon, first, I'm sorry that there is that situation. And I guess I want to ask you, how does that make you feel? As a physician responsible for that hospital?
Well, I've kind of grown up in this hospital and went to medical school here and residency here and have practiced emergency medicine here for about three decades. And, you know, to see the people that I've worked with for so long suffering the way they are is incredibly painful. And I mean, they're just exhausted at this point. And yet I have to ask him to keep moving on and to keep taking care of patients, because all indications are we have not seen the peak of this latest third and most impactful surge.
Dr. Derone, how's this resonating with you, similar to what you're seeing at Tufts Medical Center?
Yes, it is. And, you know, I think sometimes we say exhausted and it's hard to understand what that means. But, you know, it's providing the kind of care that is sort of not what you want to provide because you're being pulled in a thousand different directions. It's being emotionally drained by the things that you're seeing day in and day out, and the frustration and the disappointment that we are where we are, even a year into the vaccination campaign. Those are some of the things that really make it difficult.
All right. So many calls coming in. If the two of you are ready, I'd like to go to the phones. Does that sound good?
Sounds good.
Excellent. 800-423-8255. We have Laura on the line in Hudson. Laura, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
So I own a yoga studio here in Hudson, and we actually are pretty stringent and have been throughout the pandemic. Everybody is required to wear masks when they practice in our space. All of our teachers are required to wear masks. And just with this latest surge, we've kind of had to roll with the punches and try to figure out what, how to manage, you know, teachers going out of work because they have tested positive. And I'm just wondering what your opinion is on what should be required in order for those teachers to come back to work. I know that the CDC recommends 5 days quarantine plus the 5 days of masking. But I feel like, you know, we're wellness space and we want to keep people well. So when teachers come back to us, we want to make sure that they are in no way transmitting the disease. And some of them are still testing positive 10 days after having had it or having had symptoms. So I'm just wondering what your opinion is on what would be the best practice.
Thanks for the question, Laura. And Dr. Dixon, I'm going to turn this to you. I'm going to ask you to clarify two things in your answer to Laura. One, quarantine versus isolation, because if you test positive, I believe we're talking about isolation for 5 days. So maybe you can clarify that. And then two, in your answer about testing, et cetera, maybe clarify for us PCR testing versus antigen testing and where that fits in this mix as well.
Yeah. Well, you probably picked the wrong person because I think Dr. Giron is probably more of an expert. But from my perspective, the five-day rule from the CDC is not optimal in terms of people returning after 5 days, if they're asymptomatic, if they've been vaccinated in some situations with a negative test for us in healthcare, as long as they're asymptomatic and 5 days out, we're bringing them back to work. And it's not an ideal situation, but we're doing it because we desperately need the workforce to continue to take care of patients. And so I think the 10 days is probably very safe. 5 days is a little bit risky, and we all recognize that. The other thing I'd say is not all masks are created equal, especially with this new hyper-infectious virus. I would focus on KN95s are readily available, and they're much, much more effective than a typical cloth mask or a surgical mask. I don't particularly see a difference between isolation and quarantine. The key is to keep yourself away from others during your infectious period and trying to not infect anyone else.
All right. Thank you for that. So, Dr. Giron, I'll let you pick it up. And I'm noticing we've got some other calls coming in. People want to understand this PCR versus antigen when you take it. So maybe you can round out the answer with that piece of this.
Sure. So once you're positive for COVID, you don't want to be getting a PCR test. You really want to avoid PCRs for 90 days because that's how long some people test positive for, and it doesn't mean anything once you know you have COVID. I see people who are test positive for even 4 months. The new concept here and what's causing so much confusion is this idea that you might be able to end your isolation earlier than 10 days by using an antigen test, but it has to be an antigen test because a PCR doesn't serve that purpose. And the idea is that antigens are more closely correlated with being contagious. But Massachusetts doesn't require an antigen test to end your isolation early. This is an uncomfortable place we are here where we're sort of trying to balance feasibility of isolating so many infected people for 10 days with safety. And you don't have 100% safety when you leave isolation after 5 days. But we do have to keep society running. And so that is why we have this new shorter duration.
So from our caller's perspective, the ideal would be 10 days out, and then ideally you test negative on one of those rapid at-home antigen tests. Then you really, really know you're safe to come back. But there is no requirement.
I wouldn't do a test at 10 days.
When would you do it?
Lots of studies have shown that people aren't contagious after 10 days. So 10 days is the old rule, and it was a very conservative, very, very safe approach. If you stay isolated for 10 days, you do not need to do a test. The idea behind this test, which the CDC is suggesting you can do, but you don't have to do, is that you would do it to come out on day 6, 7, 8, 9, or 10, as opposed to day 11. But once you've gotten to day 11, I do not recommend a test.
It is Ask the Doctor. Still with us, Dr. Shira Giron of Tufts Medical Center and Dr. Eric Dixon of UMass Memorial Health. And you, the number to ask your questions, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're going to jump right back in with Dave in West Roxbury. Go ahead, Dave.
Hi, guys. So, doctors, I'm fully vaxxed. Got my booster in November. I've had my flu shot. I got my pneumococcal pneumonia. I got my shingle shot. I got Omicron at Christmas time. I've tested negative since then. What else is there? Am I bulletproof essentially for a while. Why am I still wearing a mask? Can I spread it to anybody? Can I still get it? So what's happening with those type of people? Because it's going to be a lot of people, because most people I know who have gotten it so far have been fully vaxxed and boosted.
Dave, thank you for that. And Dr. Dixon, I have heard a lot of people who vaccinated, boosted, had a breakthrough case, especially of Omicron, wondering what that means for them now. Maybe you can tell us whatever we do and don't know at this point.
Well, what's really different about this variant is that those that are vaccinated, even boosted, are clearly getting the disease at a higher level, a higher incidence. And their severity of illness isn't as bad, but they're definitely getting sick, carrying the disease and spreading it to others. If you look at highest vaccinated states in the country, it's Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New York, and New Jersey are all in the top seven. They're also all in the top seven for number of cases, new cases per day. So you're having the most new cases in the states that are in the most vaccinated regions. And what this says is that everybody has to assume they can get the virus, carry it, and give it to someone else, regardless of their vaccination status. And that really seems to be different this time around.
Doesn't that discourage Dr. Derone, the messaging on make sure you get vaccinated and you get boosted?
No, but I think that, you know, we do have to frame it differently than we did in the early days of the vaccine, where we celebrated from the rooftops that not only did it prevent symptomatic disease, hospitalization, death, but it also seemed to prevent asymptomatic disease and transmission, 90% effective back in the early days. Well, that piece isn't true anymore. It's not as effective against infection. It's not as effective at preventing transmission, but it's still amazingly effective at preventing hospitalization and death. And of course, that's what you should care about most, and that's why you should get vaccinated. The caller asked about whether Omicron infection will protect you. And for a while, it will. I mean, it is proving to be quite effective at protecting against future Omicron infection and Delta infection. But we don't know what's around the corner. And so I would not rely on just an Omicron infection alone, which may have been mild and may not have generated a lot of antibodies, to protect against whatever the next variant might be. So the vaccine is still really important.
And Dr. Dixon, my understanding is that the majority of people being hospitalized as a result of having COVID now remain those who are unvaccinated. Is that your experience at UMass Memorial Health?
Yeah, absolutely. Only 8% of the population in Massachusetts is unvaccinated. But 65% of the patients that are hospitalized are unvaccinated. So it's mostly a hospitalization pandemic of the unvaccinated.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Dr. Dixon, I think that number you just gave us maybe has at least one shot among eligible population rather than fully vaccinated. Is that possible, the 8% number?
Yeah, I think that's the number that's on the state website now, 98% vaccinated. And that I believe their definition is at least one shot.
Yeah, thank you. Great. Let's pick up Sally in Quincy. Sally, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. We have a friend that may be coming through Boston for a couple of nights from Europe, and she was supposed to come a week or 2 weeks ago and tested positive over there, so of course she couldn't come, but she's thinking of coming in the next couple of weeks, maybe 2-3 weeks, and I just wanted to know, we're double vaxxed in our house and boosted, have been very cautious, just want to know, can we have her in our home, should we be wearing masks, or what should we be doing?
Dr. Derone.
Yeah. So, you know, this gets back to, there's a lot of discomfort right now, shortened isolation periods, shortened quarantines. I would say this, you know, again, that 10 days was a very, very safe rule. 5 days is taking into account maintaining societal function. But somebody who's recently infected and more than 10 days out, is probably the safest person you can possibly be around. Somebody who's recently infected and 5 or 6 days out, well, the fact of the matter is, in this day and age, the person that the other people that you're around that you don't know are infected and that don't know they're infected are so likely to be on day 0 or 1 with a really high viral load that those people that might be on day 6 or 7 are probably the least of your worries today.
All right. That is good to know. 800-423-8255. Linda in Midfield. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was diagnosed with COVID in December 10th.
Oops, Linda, we're going to take you down until we get rid of that background noise. Okay, we're good now. Go ahead, okay, Linda. Sorry. Go ahead. Nope, you're good. Oh, we lost her. Okay, so Linda was going to ask, I'm sorry, we had a technical difficulty there. Linda's question, let's still ask it. Diagnosed with COVID a month ago, when can Linda get boosted? Dr. Dixon.
I believe the current guidelines are, is it 2 months after? And Dr. Drone may know.
You know, the CDC is pretty silent on this issue, except to say that as soon as you're out of your isolation, you may get boosted. But they don't have a recommendation around optimal timing on this.
All right. And let's grab one more call here. We've got Christine in Acton. Christine, go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering, I got my original vaccination was Johnson & Johnson, and then I've got my booster. And I was just wondering, do I have equal protection like those that got an mRNA double dose as their original and then got boosted?
Dr. Durone.
Yeah, you are obviously still considered fully vaccinated and boosted. I know that a lot of people are feeling uncomfortable about the fact that it feels like you have 2 instead of 3 vaccines. The recent data suggests that with even with 2 J&Js, but certainly with J&J plus an mRNA vaccine, you're very, very well protected against hospitalization and death. Really, everyone is at risk of mild infection and transmitting to others. So even if you had 3 mRNA vaccines, we're really finding that that's not particularly protective against infection, and everyone needs to be taking the same precautions right now.
All right, last question, I think, to you, Dr. Dixon. It was a question that came in to me earlier before the show. Is there a difference in contagion between somebody who is asymptomatic but carrying the virus and someone who is symptomatic?
I think it is, I believe the question is one more contagious than the other?
That's right.
Well, I think that any individual that has a cough is more contagious because they're shedding the virus and spreading it than an asymptomatic person that is not coughing. But I don't know of any data that would suggest that the viral shedding is higher in a symptomatic versus an asymptomatic person.
Dr. Durone, is that your understanding as well? And anything you'd add on that particular question?
You know, I guess I would just add that, you know, symptomatic people tend to be more cautious about, you know, not transmitting to others. Whereas when you're asymptomatic, you're obviously not thinking about it and you may not be taking the same precautions. So, you know, it is thought that the majority of transmission may actually be occurring from asymptomatic people. But it is really hard to parse that out epidemiologically.
All right. So at that, I'm going to end this segment. We have Dr. Shira Durone, attending physician and hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center and associate professor at Tufts University School of Medicine. Thank you, Dr. Durone.
Thank you.
And a new voice on Ask the Doctors this week. Always glad to add somebody, Dr. Eric Dixon, president and CEO of UMass Memorial Health, which is based in central Massachusetts. Dr. Dixon, thank you to you as well.
Thank you, Tiziana, and God bless all the caregivers out there.
Absolutely. All right, folks, we are going to end the show early today. In a few moments, Radio Boston will turn coverage over to WBUR, which is going to bring you special NPR coverage as President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris prepare to speak in Atlanta on the subject of voting rights. The president and vice president are due to speak at about 3:50 p.m. NPR will bring you their speeches plus analysis by NPR hosts and reporters. So that's the end of us today. I'm Tiziana Deering. Thanks so much for listening to Radio Boston.